This is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network, bringing you all Noles all the time.
In Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to the basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting rolled banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something, I can really do this.
Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Today on the podcast, we're going to take another brief look back at the Georgia Tech loss. And I'm also going to field some questions and talk about some things in terms of philosophy and some other things based on what we've seen from Florida State this year and looking forward. So let's go ahead and get into it. Now, the first thing, again, getting back to the Georgia Tech game here, is after going back through, it really is amazing how many chances Florida State left on the field in this game. I mean, just off the top of my head, going back through, you have the zone read that was missed in the red zone on first down. That if Golson pulls that, he walks into the end zone, and Jimbo Fisher confirmed on his coach's show that is correct, that he should have pulled that. Then, actually, you know, when I've gone back and I've looked at it, that. Travis Rudolph non-touchdown on that throw, that back shoulder fade throw in the end zone, I've looked at it probably 10 or 15 times now. That was a touchdown, and it was inexcusable for the ACC officiating crew not to replay that and overturn that. That was a touchdown. He got his foot down before that. He got his right foot down before the left foot went down. Florida State should have challenged it. But it was also it was inexcusable for the ACC crew not to have reviewed that. That was a touchdown. That should have also. So that's two plays on that drive that should have been touchdowns, missed opportunities. Then you have the decision to go for a field goal there instead of just going for the touchdown on the 2 yard line. So that's another missed opportunity. You have Jalen Ramsey missing a tackle coming in from the backside on the one long play that Georgia Tech had, the long Justin Thomas run. He should have gone one more step instead of laying out to try to tackle him from behind quickly. You got to be a little bit more patient and make a sure tackle. He was in position to make the tackle and didn't in the back zone or in the backfield, and that made the difference in the play. Then you have one that I'd actually forgotten when I did the instant podcast. You have a vertical route, a little post seam route to Bobo Wilson that Golson missed, and you know he puts that in stride. That may be a touchdown, so that's another miss. Then you have two false starts and a bad holding call that costs another touchdown, but that false start down in the red zone was inexcusable from first down inside the 5 yard line. Suddenly you're outside the five, and it goes from being a clear situation where you're probably going to score a touchdown to you're behind the chains effectively in inside the 10 yard line. So that's another one. That false start there, that was again that cost him another chance. Then you have on that same drive, you have Everett Golson missing Cook wide open in the flat because he read the wrong side of the field. You have a blitz coming from that side. You go to Cook in the flat. He walks in for the touchdown. That's another miss. Then you have Golson again misreads a front. You have a numbers advantage on the bubble. He throws the bubble to the field. That may score, but instead he decides to run the called quarterback draw, which is packaged with that bubble. And actually, if Kelly makes his block on the linebacker like he's supposed to, Golson walks in on that one, even though they ran into numbers. So that's two missed opportunities on one play, and then that's followed up by the interception. So that's all of those different plays. If any one play had a different result there, if Florida State had made one play out of that whole list, then they walk out of Atlanta winning. That's how tight the margins can be sometimes. And interestingly, that's how close this team is to being really, really good. That they lost to a decent boss or to a decent Georgia Tech team, but they gave that game away with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, at least 11 or 12 plays where they just, it was some sort of silly missed execution on something that should be routine, where if any one of those changes, they win the game. And if they change on half of them, they blow them out. That's where this can get really, really frustrating if you're a Florida State fan. And if you're Florida State coaching staff, you're pulling your hair out a little bit looking at that tape, because you know that they had no business losing that game. There's just not much more to say than that. And that gets back to some of the things in terms of some of the fan complaints after this game, where people were ripping into play calling, as always. And as we had mentioned on the Instant Reactions podcast, would be inevitable. You get people ripping into play calling or into who's on the field personnel. Why don't they have the bigger wide receivers on the field? You have all of that stuff that comes up. But the fact is, these guys, the plays were there. And I know there are a lot of people out there who are, you know, again, they're ripping into the personnel, saying, well, you know, your tiny wide receivers in the red zone, that's why they can't score. Well, geez, they had separation on the one to Rudolph. It wouldn't have mattered how big he was. It was an underthrow through to the back shoulder instead of the front. And, you know, maybe one of the other receivers catches that. Maybe they don't. We don't know. He's actually been one of the more reliable catchers of the football on the team, and he just didn't catch it. So that's not a size issue. Same thing on the other one. He actually did catch it, and it wasn't ruled a catch. So, you know, those are two plays right there where that's two touchdowns that had nothing to do with being a smaller or a bigger receiver. And, you know, at this point, they haven't been able to put bigger receivers on the field for a reason. You know, and this is actually worth noting. I mean, here's what Jimbo Fisher said earlier in the week, and I've been saying this for several weeks, and I don't know why nobody listens to me on this, or it seems like it, but why isn't Florida State putting their bigger freshman wide receivers on the field, and, you know, their sophomore wide receiver, Pig Harrison, on the field? Well, here's what Jimbo Fisher had to say about this in terms of, you know, he was asked at practice, why aren't the younger wide receivers playing? And he said, Alden Tate's got a broken toe. Another had his finger split open and had 6 stitches in it. It's now healed up and he's catching the ball again. That's George Campbell. And I told you guys, he was having trouble catching the ball in practice. Campbell had also missed almost a month of good reps because of a hamstring bit. So he said he's doing well now. And then Nooney, that's Nyquan Murray, just got over a broken hand. He had surgery and it's taken about 3 weeks to get the strength back in his hand. So now he's had the cast off his hand for about 3 weeks, and he's starting to get back to where he can play. So, you know, as he said, one had stitches in his finger, one had a broken hand, the other has a broken toe. It's hard to judge a guy when they're banged up like that. So that's what Fisher has had to say. And Devontae Phillips isn't ready. I mean, he's just not ready. So then, you know, well, I'm getting a lot of questions on Twitter and such, you know, well, why not Pig Harrison? Where's he been? Pig Harrison has had an MCL issue for about a month, a little over a month. He's been having trouble changing directions. Now, he's getting back in practice. He's pretty close now. You know, the brace came off last week. But, you know, he's had an MCL injury. He's had trouble changing direction. He's had trouble doing the things that you need to do as a wide receiver. And you can be a big body out there all you want, but it's not going to make a difference if you can't stick your foot in the ground. So, you know, this is, again, I want to reiterate that if it seems like the more talented player is sitting on the sideline, if it just seems like the coaching staff won't play the most talented player, and you just keep looking there, why isn't this guy playing? I assure you, there's a reason. There's good reason for that. This goes back to, I remember when Carlos Williams was at safety. And everybody, why is Carlos Williams not playing? He's a 5-star. You know, we're having trouble with this or that. And Carlos Williams wouldn't have that issue. I can tell he did have those issues, and that's why he wasn't playing. In addition, at that time, I kept trying to hint around, you can't really throw kids under the bus, but Carlos was not working hard. He wasn't paying attention in meetings. He was being difficult. Carlos, and then a couple years later, when he moved to running back, he was finally talking about how he had been immature. He was finally bringing it up, and we could finally talk about it a little bit, on this show and elsewhere, that he couldn't he understood why they weren't playing him, that he wasn't paying attention in meetings, that he didn't really care, that he wasn't doing what was necessary for him. So, you know, the general rule of thumb here is that the coaching staff, believe it or not, is really interested in winning. They really would like to win, and they believe that the best way to win is to put the best players in the field. But until a player decides to work hard or show that he's reliable and, you know, actually do what's necessary to demonstrate that he's actually going to do a better job than the guy that's on the field, they're not going to stick that guy out there. They can't, for several reasons. One is you're sticking a guy out there who may be more physically talented, but he's going to make more mistakes, get you in more trouble, and not necessarily be better than the more limited upperclassmen. Or the second piece of this, I guess it's an and, the second piece of this is you are potentially destroying your culture. And that's as big a piece of this as anything. And this is what I keep trying to remind people of. Jimbo Fisher is a long play guy. He's always making the long play. He's not a short-term guy. And you hear this all the time when he talks about this stuff in press conferences. He doesn't believe in today's, you know, he rails on this regularly about today's culture of instant gratification. That, you know, well, everybody wants something, you know, right away, that we want instant gratification. And he's always talking about how this is a problem. Well, for his team, he takes, again, that the opposite perspective. Everything's about the long play. Everything is not just about this week, but it's about what happens next year, the year after that, and so on. And Fisher is of the opinion, and it's really hard to argue with him here, that if you start playing guys who haven't earned it, and if you stick a guy out there just because he's physically a little bit better, before he's disciplined, before he's actually showing that he's reliable in practice and all that, then you are hurting the team's overall culture, because you're basically privileging guys. You're entitling them on the basis of whatever rating they may have had out of high school or whatever. You're just putting them out there without them actually having achieved or accomplished or won the job. And he doesn't believe in that. Because once you start doing that, other players start to notice. And then you get people feeling like somebody's playing favorites on the one hand, or you get people who are saying, oh, well, you know, he didn't have to work to get there. You have to foster a certain culture of taking care of business. And if that means that you don't play the most talented guy, if that means that sometimes that guy who's pretty close to winning the position, you're going to have to get him motivated enough to actually do his job, then so be it. It may cost you just a little bit in the present, but overall, in terms of the long-term health of the program, you don't have to flee your own locker room like Urban Meyer did at Florida. Because you've continued to establish that in your program, people are going to have to work. They're going to have to abide by the culture that you've established in your program. And that's a big deal. And I should mention that for those of you who are out there on social media, who are, you know, tweeting and using Facebook or Instagram or whatever, and are constantly complaining and whining and moaning, why isn't George Campbell out there? Why isn't, you know, why isn't Jacquez Patrick playing? You know, we got a five-star sitting on the bench, and, you know, Jacquez Patrick should be playing, and they're just, the coaching staff just isn't using their talent. You realize that you're part of the problem? You are a part of the problem. What happens is these players are on social media, whether they're tweeting or not, they're on social media. And they get to read, what they're reading is, oh, it's the coach's fault. The coaches just don't, they're not playing the best guys. You know, if they would just play the best guys, then, you know, Jacquez Patrick should be out there. And so Jacquez Patrick doesn't feel like he feels like he's being done wrong. And so he can operate with entitlement. With, you know, he can be lazy. he can, you know, continue to not react to coaching and not do the things that they're trying to get him to do in order for him to be the player that he needs to be on the field. And he just basically feels justified because the coaches just aren't doing what they should do with me. And you know how I know? Because there's hundreds of people online that see what the coaches don't. They know I should be out there. But see, that's the culture problem. That's where this comes in, and these players are so entitled and so spoiled when they get onto campus as five stars, and it's always been the case, but it's even more the case now. But in the past, coaches didn't have to, you know, coaches would have to break guys down because it takes a while for a player to realize, like, I'm not the best guy on my team anymore. I actually have to earn my playing time now. Takes a while for that. It takes longer now in many cases because you have all of these other voices who are telling these players, man, coach is just doing you wrong. You should be out there. But see, they're not doing these players wrong. They're trying to establish a culture and trying to get these players better to the point where they're going to be prepared to play when they do. So this is where I think it's really important for fans. This is one place where fans can hurt their own program. But either way, I just don't think that right now making any sort of personnel changes or, you know, sticking George Campbell out there or whatever in the red zone would have made a hill of beans difference in this game. I don't think any of that had any real impact on what happened at Georgia Tech. I just think this loss at the end of the day was a long time coming. It was just a matter of time. I mean, Florida State, I think, had won their last 13 games decided by one score or less. And that's just highly improbable. Highly, highly improbable. So at some point, you're going to lose one of those. At some point, you're not going to make the key play, one of the key plays. You're going to have enough plays that are not, that you don't make to that it's going to happen. I mean, I got a text after the game from somebody in the program that said, hey, we got what we deserved. We're back to being a team who can't stay on sides or lined up. We've been getting away with it so long that we just naturally expected to get away with it again, but Georgia Tech had other ideas. That's the insider take on this. And actually, if you think about it, this is, again, you look at what happened with that 2013 team. That 2013 team had experienced that loss at NC State in 2012. Those leaders had. And they knew what it felt like to get upset like that when you know you're the better team, just to have not made those plays. And then they knew what it felt like to sit there in film session the next film session and go through, here's a play. If you'd have just made this play, we win the game. Here's another play. If you make this play, we win the game. And over and over and over again, you start going through that, and these guys see that it changes the approach. So long term, yes, you want to win these games, but as Jimbo Fisher said after the game, you know, we lost one game. It's not, the sky's not falling. There are different ways to learn from this. If this team decides to get just a little bit better, just that tiny bit better in terms of attention to detail, then it could bode well for the future. Obviously, it doesn't bode well for now. And once again, this is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Now, flipping over to some of the other bigger issues, like the false starts. I was asked, basically, why? What's up with all these false starts? You know, are they just, has this team come out flat or whatever? It is not that. I can assure you that it's not that. And actually, I think Jimbo Fisher has addressed a lot of this in the way that he handled this in his interviews. But I was asked this specifically on Twitter about the false starts and, you know, what is up with the false starts? It's frustrating. When I knew that this was a rebuilding year, I'd hope for more, but the false starts against Georgia Tech were just unacceptable. Now, my response to this actually was before the Fisher interview, but I'd said, listen, this is exactly what you expect with inexperienced players who are trying too hard to make plays, it's something you just have to grow out of. And the thing is, trying too hard comes from a good place. These are guys, it's not a matter that they don't care. It's actually, you can care too much. When you're a young player, it's really easy to care too much. All you really want to do is make the play. You're trying so hard. And Fisher in his press conference gave a good example of, you know, when you're on the golf course and you want to really hit a good shot, sometimes you overswing or you overthink the shot and you just shank it. You know, the worst drive you're going to hit all day is the one that you try to hit the furthest. But if you're an experienced player, if you're an experienced golfer, you know you can just go up there and make the swing that you know to make and you don't worry about it, and then you hit it well. There are so many examples of this in life where when you're trying so hard, what you want the most right at that moment is the very thing you can't have as long as you want it so badly, because you have to take your eye off of what you want at the moment and actually put your eye back on doing what you need to do in order to accomplish that. That's so hard to do because, and this is why, by the way, this is why you don't see the false starts until it's really right, until the game is really, right at pins and needles where things are, the pressure is at the very highest. That's when you see the false starts. You see the false starts when it's fourth quarter and it's 16-13, or when it's 16 all, and you just need, all you need to do is you've got to make this one play. You've got to make this play to win. You've got to do it. And what happens is you focus on, okay, this is it. This is it. I got to do it. And then you screw up. And when you're a young guy, when you don't have experience, you haven't learned how to live in that moment, how to get into the zone where you're just focusing on the task at hand rather than on what the score is or the fact that you need to do this right now. You know, your great golfers, when they have a pressure putt, they're not thinking about, oh, I've got to make this. If I don't make this, I'm going to lose. They're thinking, okay, you know, fundamentals, line up, get myself square. All right, easy back, easy forward, keep your head down and hit it online. Everything is just, you know, they're going through the fundamental checklist and they make the putt because they make it a routine. And your best putters, your best pressure putters are guys who aren't thinking about the pressure. They're not thinking. All they do, they have a routine that they think through. They have a mental checklist, whatever works for them. You know, Tiger Woods used to be putt to the picture. Jack Nicklaus, it was always about picking that one blade of grass in front of the ball that you want to make sure you hit the ball over, and then just make sure that you have the right backswing and put the right pace on it, and you'll hit the putt. Everything is about focusing on making it routine so that it's the same putt, whether it's for winning the Masters or the U.S. Open or just making sure that you hit your 90th in a row and on the putting green. It's the same one. And it takes a while to get there. It just does. It's really hard. It's really hard to get there without experience. And what we have right now is you're seeing a lot of inexperience across the board. And that's why you see one guy screw up here and one guy screw up there and one guy screw up here. And you know, it's not one guy who's making all the mistakes. It's one guy at a time. You go through and, you know, there's various players that you can blame for each mistake. And it's because they're all young and they're all growing up together. And that's when you get a rebuilding year. That's what this is. And I mean, we knew that all along. I mean, we've talked about that from the beginning, from all the way back in the summer, that this was going to be a rebuilding year, that this was not the 2013 situation where you had a team that was locked and loaded and ready to go. That the 2016 team is the one that's going to look like the 2013 team in that regard. The 2016 team, just like 2013, is going to have a brand new quarterback, but everything around that quarterback is, I mean, the new quarterback is going to get handed the keys to the Ferrari and just said, and it's going to be told, don't crash it. And people have forgotten the struggles of 2011 and to some degree that of 2012 and how frustrated they were and how back in 2012, I was telling people, man, in 2013, this team is going to be loaded. This offense is going to be incredible. And people, oh, no, they had a senior quarterback last year and they couldn't do anything. Yes, but see, it's not about the quarterback. So much of quality quarterback play is the result of the guys around him. And next year's quarterback is going to have every advantage. You have 21 as of right now. That's presuming that, you know, Sean McGuire's here for next year as well. And who knows what's going to happen in terms of the quarterback competition. It's a little early to talk about that. But outside of the quarterback position, you have 21 of the 22 two deep players. So Everett Golson is a senior. He's going to be gone. Outside of him, every player in the offensive two deep on this team is going to return for next year. Everyone. And of course, I'm hearing people saying, well, yeah, that's not real good because they're not playing real well now. I mean, you're going to get guys back, but they're not very good. Listen, these guys are super talented. Super talented. And they're making progress. If you're looking at what's actually happening on the field, they're making progress. And yes, you've got false starts. Yes, you've got mistakes. Those are inexperienced things. Those get fixed. You can't fix a lack of talent. But Roderick Johnson is a first-round talent. Kareem R. is a high draft pick talent. You know, first couple rounds talent. Derek Kelly is gonna get drafted probably in the first three or four rounds. Ryan Izzo and Maven Saunders, both those tight ends are going to be very good next year. Izzo's playing good football right now. Freddie Stevenson's going to be back. Dalvin Cook is going to be back, as is his backup, Mario Pender, who has been snake bit, yes, but at some point he's going to stay healthy and he's going to be, he is a quality back when he's healthy. Every wide receiver on the roster returns, not just Travis Rudolph and Jesus Wilson, you know, Bobo Wilson and Kermit Whitfield, the guys who are out there right now, but the guys who've been hurt, some of the bigger bodies who are going to be able to contribute, George Campbell, Javon Harrison, Ermine Lane, Auden Tate, all those guys are going to be back and they're all going to be a year older. And the thing is, the biggest growth that a guy is going to have in a program is between year one and year two. And the next biggest growth, if it's not coinciding with that, is going to be between first year as a starter and the second year as a starter. Or first year of significant playing time versus second year of significant playing time. So most of this year's team is in their first year of significant playing time. The growth is happening now, and it's going to happen in the offseason. And then you're going to see next year, all of those guys are going to be just massively improved. And then, you know, next year at the center position, we don't know who's going to be there, but either way, you've got a sophomore in Hofeld right now, and Everly is a backup as a freshman. Those guys are going to be a year older, stronger, better, et cetera. Or you're going to have, you're going to have Cole Minshew, who is the guy that they really wanted at center, who's had he had an ankle problem and now he's had a couple concussions. He's just, you know, as Jimbo Fisher said earlier this week, the football gods have just not been smiling on him. That's a guy who is just, you know, he's a monster. So, you know, you put four returning starters around him on the offensive line and 6-7 guys who've got a lot of playing time on the offensive line around him. That offense is going to be dynamite next year. And then if Jacquez Patrick decides to actually get interested in doing what he needs to do and toughen up and begin to do what he's asked to do, you've got a big back who is another contributor in that context. And then the defense returns 12 of the 22, or I'm sorry, 14 of the 22. You lose Lawrence Stample, you lose Reggie Northrup and Terrence Smith. Obviously, Jalen Ramsey is a huge loss. And then LaMarcus Brutus and Tyler Hunter. And in those places, you've got lots of talent. Linebacker spot is the only spot where there's any concern, really, for next year. And there are some young guys that should be pretty solid contributors at that spot next year. They're just not quite ready yet. And in the secondary, there's just a tremendous amount of talent in the secondary. You return Marquez White, you return Nate Andrews, who will play a lot of that money role and so on. You got Derwin James coming back for his second year. He's going to be a stud. He's already showing that potential. Trey Marshall gets back. And then you've got a host of options for that corner position. Next year's team is slated to be exactly what we thought it would be. Josh Sweat comes back healthy in his second year. That guy is going to be ridiculous next year. So it's important that Florida State fans not take their eye off of what's actually happening and just get discouraged by one outcome. Because, again, this was a long time coming. This team has long been owed a couple close losses. But what we've seen is that this team, as all inexperienced teams, has a low floor and a very high ceiling. We saw the ceiling in the second half of the Louisville game, where they blew out a pretty good Louisville team. We've seen the floor a couple times when they've, you know, putted around and kicked the ball around against Miami and against Georgia Tech and against Wake Forest and some of these. We've seen that inconsistency. And the thing is, the team that blew out that Louisville team could very well go into Death Valley and beat Clemson. But the team that played against Georgia Tech could lose by 40 to Clemson. There's your variability when you have this kind of inexperienced team. It's just a factor of inexperience. Simple as that. Now, a little bit later this week, I want to take some opportunities to talk a little bit about some of the offensive stuff. I mean, there's so many misunderstandings about Jimbo Fisher's offense, and you know, this idea that, oh, with an inexperienced quarterback next year, it's going to be difficult. Or there's even someone on Twitter who is suggesting that Jimbo Fisher doesn't include the flat as a primary read, that, you know, one of the reasons they've been struggling is that, you know, when you have Dalvin Cook in the flat wide open, that's the fourth read, and it's always open, but the quarterbacks are not taught to hit him in Jimbo's offense. That's just not true. First of all, Jimbo's offense, this demonstrates some misunderstanding that I'm going to need to clean up in this podcast. I need to help some people understand. Jimbo Fisher's offense doesn't operate according to a progression read system where one guy's your first read, second read, third read, fourth read, etc. He runs up what you could label a hybrid coverage read system where basically you see what the coverage is and you should immediately know it's one or the other. So you're not exactly progressing from one read to the next, from one guy to the next guy to the next guy, like you see in some offenses. That's an old West Coast typical type thing more often than not. With Fisher, you see, okay, it's, you know, this coverage, I know I'm going to read this side of the field, check the safety. All right, now I go to the flat. And flat may be my first read, or it could be my fourth. It's going to totally depend on coverage, and I'm not progressing in that way. So that's the sort of thing I want to talk about a little bit on one of the next shows. But we're already at the point where I gotta wrap this one up. So that's gonna do it for us today. Now again, a reminder that you can follow me on Twitter @DocStaples. You can of course follow Seminole Sports Radio @SeminolesRadio for the latest on FSU sports. I'm Jason Staples. This has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, a Vsporto channel. Thanks for listening. I made this.